Your financial choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org under Public Affairs and stream live with us regularly. Today is June 3rd, 2020. The markets have been showing a rally recently. As of yesterday, the Dow had been up, and the NASDAQ and the S&P from the lows we'd seen back in February and March. So hopefully this will continue, but I could expect that we might still see some volatility as time goes on, depending on what happens with the coronavirus and if there's a second wave. But I'm sure that with some of the scheduled reopening, it is, showing some optimism in the market. So stay tuned for that. We are pre-recorded this evening. We are not live. So if you have questions, you can send those through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. Tonight, we are going to revisit the provisions of the CARES Act, the timeline, and what else might be coming. There are a number of different provisions that I feel we just kind of want to touch base on, give some updates to see where we are. So again, if you have questions, you can email us at yourfinancialchoices.com. I will respond directly to you and possibly use your questions in upcoming shows while, you know, maintaining your anonymity. So welcome back again. Big thank you to all the people out there who are continuing to work and hold down the fort for so many of us while we're being careful and managing what's going on in the world today. And the best wishes to everyone through all of these trying times. Many provisions came out of the CARES Act, which seems like a lifetime ago. It was March 27th that was implemented, and what we have seen since then are sometimes some modifications or clarifications on some of the provisions that came out. So I thought it would be worth talking about some of those. The big provisions that I'm going to touch on are, number one, the economic income payment, which again, over the course of this time has had three different names. I think it was called the recovery rebate. It's called the stimulus payment, but it basically, the official name was the economic income payment. So I'm going to touch on that. A little bit on unemployment, the pandemic unemployment assistance, a brief update on the Paycheck Protection Program, the PPP, the emergency income disaster loan, and some tax relief that we're seeing and that we're all benefiting from right now. So first, the economic income payment or the stimulus payment. So the IRS has lots of information on this because I would say this is probably one of the areas where I've seen the most questions, and there are a lot of questions related to it about who qualifies for it, how do you get it, what format are you getting it, how do they calculate it. So on the IRS website, if you go to irs.gov, because I am not going to be able to cover all those questions on this radio show tonight, but I thought I could lead you to where you can get the answers to some of these questions. On irs.gov, you click the link for Get Coronavirus Relief. and you see the link there for the economic income payments and get answers to economic income payments. So there's like three links, irs.gov, click on coronavirus relief link. Then you'll see a section called economic income payments, and there's a link there that says get answers to economic income payments. And then those questions will relate to eligibility, requesting the payment, calculating the payment, receiving your payment, and even returning payments that were inadvertently processed. So we will, I can kind of go through some of those in just a minute, but I also thought it would be important to talk about the timeline first. So the timeline, and this was according to an AARP columnist, John Wagner, wrote an article on this on May 24th, and he said the timeline is something like this, because the IRS wouldn't give us an official timeline, but gleaning from information that he found, he came up with this timeline. So the week of April 13th, taxpayers with direct deposit information for their bank accounts on file with the IRS, they were the early bird beneficiaries of those stimulus payments. So that was the first wave, and most people already saw those come in their bank account and then subsequently received a letter kind of confirming that this occurred and that you should have received the payment. And if you had questions about that or you didn't receive it, there was, I believe, a phone number on that letter to follow up. So that was the initial round. Also included in the initial round were Social Security beneficiaries who filed tax returns in 2018 or 2019. Now, the week of April 20th, they started making additional weekly payments by direct deposit to people who had provided that direct deposit information on the IRS.gov website. So for people who didn't have direct deposit information included on their tax return as far as a refund, you could have gone on the IRS website, the IRS.gov website, and provided that bank information to the IRS prior to your payment going out. And if you did it timely, they would have sent that out as a refund. They also had started issuing paper checks at that time to people who had not provided the direct deposit information and where they had a mailing address. So the checks were being issued for those people supposedly with the lowest incomes first. So that's why you might have heard some people getting them and, you know, wondering why you weren't. Now, at the end of April, they were going to start sending out the stimulus checks for people with Social Security retirement, survivor, and disability insurance who did not file tax returns in 2018 or 2019. And frankly, I think there's been some confusion as to how Social Security recipients were supposed to be receiving those stimulus payments. I had thought if they had that information on file that you were automatically going to get it directly deposited, but apparently that was not the case because some people were getting checks even though they thought they had direct deposit information on account with the IRS at that time. So a little bit of confusion. The point is you want to make sure if you're entitled to a check or a stimulus payment, how are you getting it, what format, and when. I'm at my first break, and when I come back, I'll kind of update you on the remaining timeline because there still are stimulus payments going out, and there has been some confusion around a debit card that's been issued. So I want to highlight that as well. We'll do that when we come back right after this next break.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or wdiy.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. Tonight we are talking about some of the provisions of the CARES Act and the timeline and what updates we might have had on some of these provisions. So we're talking right now about the economic income payment, probably more familiarly called the stimulus payment, and the timeline where some people have received checks, some people have received direct deposits into their bank account, and some people are going to actually receive these debit cards. Some have already received them. But the timeline, we are still seeing some of these payments being made. So in early May, the Treasury Department announced that many adult supplemental security income, SSI recipients, would receive their payments by early May. So we've already passed that. Again, if you have received a payment, you should receive a letter as well. So if you haven't received a letter, there may be a reason why, and you want to make sure that you're, you know, understanding if you qualify or not, and it's based on income. So there are some frequently asked questions on the IRS's website that if you go to irs.gov, you will see a link for coronavirus-related relief, and click on that, and then there's some FAQs under economic income payments. Late May, they were accelerating more stimulus payments by paper check. They were doing that in late May, so we're only at June 3rd, so it may still be coming. The ARP article, the AARP article that I'm referencing, stated that the IRS had issued stimulus payments both electronically and by paper check, and to approximately 1.4 million SSI recipients and 10.4 million Social Security beneficiaries whose monthly benefits are managed on their behalf by representative payees. So that's another little change or something to be aware of. In addition, the IRS announced it will mail out stimulus payments in the form of prepaid debit cards rather than paper checks to approximately 4 million eligible taxpayers who didn't have bank account information on file. This is where I was confused, because I had understood that if they had your bank information on file for Social Security recipients, that it would automatically go to that bank account. That's how I had interpreted what they had said. But no, in fact, I have had clients who are Social Security recipients who know they did not have bank information on their tax return, but again, thinking they were Social Security recipients with bank information, that it would go there. But no, they've either had checks or now these prepaid debit cards, which I really want to talk about because those have caused a tremendous amount of confusion. But continuing with this timeline that I wanted to go through, June, the IRS says it will continue to issue stimulus payments by paper check in June. What if you don't get your stimulus payment? You can start by checking the IRS website, Get My Payment. There's a tool there for determining whether your payment's been issued, and the IRS only updates that tool once a day, so you won't get anything but frustration by checking several times a day. Again, this is from that article on AARP, and I thought that was interesting. If you're concerned about the check being lost in the mail or the direct deposit not going in the right place, or you get that letter, the letter should include a phone number that is supposed to help people. But my question is if you maybe had a wrong address, or if you never received the letter but think that you were going to qualify for the payment, should you also call that letter? Or they say, go check online on Get My Payment. Well, what if you don't have a computer? Many of our older taxpayers or older citizens don't have computers. So there is a 1-800 number to call, and it's 1-800-919-9835. And just because they have that phone number doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be able to talk to someone. But if you do get a person on the line, that could make the difference in trying to explore this and find out more about it. So as far as these economic stimulus payments that are being put on a debit card, I have had a couple circumstances, and I think I talked about this last week, where I had someone receive the debit card. They thought it was junk mail. They set it aside and then decided to call me about it. We went through and found that indeed the letter was valid. We compared it to what was indicated was should have been expected online. I found something. And the letter describes what you need to do to activate that ATM or debit card. And there's a number to call to activate it, or you can go online to activate it. But the letter is from MetaBank, and the ATM card, I think, has that information on the back, and it's a debit card. I keep calling it an ATM card. A debit card has like a Visa on the front of it. So you need to activate the card, and you can do that, again, over the telephone or via a computer. My client did not have a computer, and she was able to activate it over the phone. And then subsequently, the letter says you can use it for ATM transactions or debit transactions. Well, this woman didn't want to do that. She just wanted to put it in her bank account, just like everyone else who got the stimulus check was able to do, to put it into her bank account. And she made an appointment with the bank and was able to go in, and they helped her transfer the full balance into her bank account. Now, the bank had told her that they may not be able to do the full balance, that they, in some cases, they were only able to do $1,000, and her check was $1,200. And she said, well, let's go ahead and try it. And it went through. So that was good, because they told her if they tried again, or they couldn't try again a second time, they could only do it once a day, they couldn't do it a second time, and then it was going to incur a $5 fee for that transaction. So some people who are getting the debit cards may incur additional costs, which I think is very unfortunate and not fair, because there are people who got their full stimulus payment either directly deposited into their account or via a check that they could directly deposit into their bank account. And the people who receive the debit cards may end up having fees related to it. I don't know what their logic was or what their criteria was for deciding who was to get the debit cards, but apparently 4 million people got the debit cards. So subsequent to that client, I had another client that I talked to this morning that indicated she's in Florida, and she is in a community of course, senior community, and she said everyone in the community were cutting up these cards and the mail because it was a plain envelope that arrived, and they just thought it was a scam or some, you know, advertising event or something, and they cut up and threw them away. And she said, in fact, so many people cut them up that they were given a special phone number. Now, that special phone number might be that phone number I just gave you. I'm not sure. I don't know if there would have been a specific phone number just for those people down in that community, but it has caused a lot of confusion. I did have another question that came in on that, too, which I'll read when we come back from this next break. So tonight we are talking about the CARES Act, the timeline, and some of the updates on the provisions of the CARES Act. And if you have questions, you can send them through the website at yourfinancialchoices.com, because we are not live as of yet. This is still a pre-recorded show, and you can send questions through yourfinancialchoices.com. We will be back in just a moment.
For support of WDIY, we thank the Greenwald Family Fund of the Philadelphia Foundation, the Keystone Savings Foundation, the Martin Guitar Charitable Foundation, the Sylvia Perkin Charitable Trust, and the Verna O. Canova Foundation.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and it may be tax deductible. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Welcome back to Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert. We're talking about the Coronavirus or CARES Act and some of the provisions and updates to those provisions. I have been talking about the economic income payment or the stimulus payment, and I had just mentioned about the debit card, but there are some issues sometimes with the checks as well. I had a listener send in a question. She said, I've tried using, and this is from Mary, I've tried using the Get My Payment tool unsuccessfully for weeks using my latest tax return information, which was from tax year 2018. A former neighbor just gave me an IRS mailing that had gone to my old address. Using that, I was able to see that a check was issued on May 15th. The people now living at that address say they didn't receive other mail. I have filed 2 years' worth of tax returns to my new address, so I don't know why the IRS is using the old address. I keep checking to see if the IRS gets the check back from the post office. No luck yet. How long should I wait, and what's my next step to take? And she said she didn't want to file a change of address form because she's already filed 2 years' worth of tax returns with the new address. She's afraid for mix-ups. So basically, I replied to Mary, and I said, I would expect that if the IRS sent your check to the old address and the forwarding of mail that you put on that is no longer valid, the post office would send the check back to the IRS. If by chance the check does show up at your old address and you have been in contact with the current residents, they could deliver it to you. You might also call the post office for your old address and ask if they know what options you might have, like would they still forward it? I doubt it, but it could be. My guess is that the check would be returned to the post office. See if you get the letter that the IRS is sending and where it goes. So if she gets the follow-up letter from the IRS that a check has been mailed to her new address, then perhaps the check will still eventually make it to her house. So I said to her, see if you get the letter that the IRS is sending and where it goes, and that will be the clue as to the whereabouts of your check. I think it's odd that they wouldn't have updated your address, because that is one of the ways to update your address with the IRS, is to do it on a timely filed tax return. You don't always have to use the Form 8822. So hopefully you'll still get the check at your current address. It might just be a timing issue. So just watch out for that. Or you could try this phone number, because this phone number, again, that I mentioned earlier, is part of the letter that they're mailing, and I'm going to give that number one more time, 1-800-919-9835. Now, in Mary's case, if you don't reach a representative, it would be very hard, I think, to try to explain her situation. One other question that has come up is some people had received extra checks, like perhaps they had a spouse who passed away and had received a check. There was questions about returning that. Yes, the IRS wants you to return it. If it was a paper check, you could just still write void in the endorsement check, in the endorsement section of the back of the check, and mail the voided treasury check immediately to the appropriate IRS location. And it depends on what state you are in. So you can get that information on the IRS website and return it with a brief explanation as to why you would do it. If you already cashed it, they want you to submit a personal check or a money order immediately to the appropriate IRS location, again, depending on where you live. So that occurred for some people, mostly who had maybe been married filing joint in 2018, but maybe the spouse passed in 2019, and they sent a check for both, and the deceased spouse wouldn't have been entitled to it, so they want that check back. So for clients we had that had received it for a deceased spouse, we told them not to cash it at all, wait for further guidance, and here was the further guidance. So this is what the show's about tonight, updates to some of the provisions and confusion that was around some of those. So if you accidentally or inadvertently cashed it or received a direct deposit, they want that money back. It could be a personal check. You make it out to the United States Treasury, and include on the memo section 2020 EIP and the taxpayer identification number for that person, and then mail it to the address for the state in which you live. All right. So what other kind of provisions do we have with the CARES Act? The unemployment and PUA, or the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance. And I think that this is worthwhile receiving an update to, because sometimes we, you know, got that initial piece of information and we didn't necessarily know how to navigate the system or know what to do. Specifically speaking, in particular to self-employed people who now became eligible for unemployment when they did not qualify for it before. So these were new waters we were traversing, and while we said, hey, you're going to be eligible for unemployment, and we had some of our self-employed people going and filing for unemployment, there was a bit of a hiccup because they weren't actually supposed to file under the normal system. We had to wait until the state built a new portal for the people who were self-employed to file in a separate section of the state website for unemployment. So it was very confusing for a period of time, but it seems to have been worked out, and I have a number of self-employed clients who have now not only applied for their unemployment assistance under the PUA, the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance, they've actually received their checks. So I thought it was worthwhile kind of talking about this a little bit. Now, the unemployment, some of the provisions of the CARE Act included some extra unemployment compensation, and it was under a program called the Federal Pandemic Unemployment Compensation, which was an emergency program to help with the unemployment benefits for not just self-employed people, but, you know, normal employees who are filing for unemployment. So it increased the unemployment benefits for those people who were out of work because of the COVID-19 pandemic. So recall, stores were closed, businesses were closed, we were told to stay home. So many people were laid off or furloughed, lost their ability to work. Maybe you were impacted by illness or taking care of someone with an illness. So this federal pandemic unemployment compensation was to increase the benefits to help, understanding that regular unemployment might not have been enough and we didn't know how long this was going to last. They also provide an extra $600 to eligible folks in federal benefits each week, and that's through July 31st. And the states are going to be providing that extra payment. I think I've been told that it comes in two different payments, so the federal extra $600 comes as a separate payment. And people are eligible for retroactive payments. So if you were just delayed in filing for unemployment for whatever reason, when you go to make your claim and you enter the start date of your unemployment, there is retroactive payments for this. So don't think, oh gosh, I'm only going to get from June to July 31st. If you were technically unemployed on, you know, April 1st, there will be retroactive payments made, so I think that's important to note. When we come back from the halfway point here in our break, I will talk a little bit more about the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance for self-employed people and the program as well and what we know about it so far. Folks, if you have questions, you can go through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com, and we will be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
This is Operations Director Neil Heaver. Many of the real voices you know at WDIY have been absent this spring as they observe the call to stay home and stay safe. WDIY has continued to provide NPR news and a variety of music during the pandemic. We hope to bring back the many choices and real voices, and plans are in the works to do so cautiously. Please check our website for information about returning hosts. Our best wishes to you and your loved ones, and thank you for listening and supporting us at WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. Tonight we're talking about the CARES Act, the timeline, and what else might be coming. We've talked about the economic income payment or stimulus payment already and the various forms that may come in, direct deposit, check, debit card being the more problematic child of that program. Now we're talking about unemployment, unemployment compensation for employees, and unemployment compensation for self-employed. So part of the federal pandemic unemployment compensation program, which is was established through the CARES Act, I had mentioned, provides this extra $600 a week in federal benefits, and that's through July 31st, 2020, with retroactive payments for eligible people. This program also provided an extra 13 weeks of unemployment benefits, so it extends unemployment for an extra 13 weeks, and I believe that takes us to 39 weeks. And that expands the unemployment insurance eligibility also to self-employed workers, or sometimes referred to as freelancers, independent contractors, and part-time workers who are impacted by the coronavirus. So I think that is part of what you have to show, is that you were impacted by the coronavirus. And that could be that, again, you had to isolate for being impacted by the virus that shows a positive test, or that you were a caretaker for someone, or that you had to, you were impacted by the closures at the state level of a number of businesses and things like that. All right. So most states do recommend applying for unemployment online. So keep in mind, if you are self-employed, you may have a different portal for applying for unemployment. So I know in Pennsylvania, you have to go to a PUA portal, PUA being the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance portal. So that extra amount, the $600, the extra 13 weeks, and that they opened this up to self-employed people. And again, this is through that federal program. Let's see what else. So I think that's something to be aware of if you hadn't already filed. I've had people say they weren't sure if they would qualify. They didn't know if it would be worth it. So nothing hurts for you to go online and check it out. And you can just Google. I didn't look up the Pennsylvania State Unemployment website, but if you just Google Pennsylvania Unemployment website, the website should pop up, and you can kind of navigate and follow the directions and you know, make a claim if it's necessary. I know for self-employed people, they want you to upload such things as either your tax return or your Schedule C showing your income, or even 1099s that you might have received to confirm the kind of revenue or income you had prior to this happening. So basically your 2019 information. And one client who had done this had uploaded her Schedule C. It was right after that that she received her first payment, so that seemed to suffice. One of the other programs, the Paycheck Protection Program, the PPP, that program was to help the businesses who were impacted by the coronavirus, and maybe their businesses had to close, or maybe they had to scale back. They've lost revenue, so their business was impacted. This was to provide the ability for people or businesses to apply for a loan to help kind of bridge the gap of where we are to where we would open again. And it really was to provide kind of the bridge for about 8 weeks. Now, we're going on several months already, almost 3 months at this point. Mid-March was when this, you know, really hit, so we're talking about 3 months. So 8 weeks is what it was supposed to provide from the time you got the loan. So even though they passed some of these provisions on March 27th, it took a while before they were implemented and before the Small Business Administration was even set up to manage all the applications that were coming. And then the banks had to manage all of the applications that were coming in. So it took a while for some of these programs to take off. And so that gave us a little bit more time as well. As the loans were coming in, there was a certain amount allotted for that, and there was such a demand for it that first batch of money kind of disappeared. You've all heard the stories where the administration came out and said, "Hey, people who really didn't need that loan should pay it back." So we saw some bigger businesses and corporations returning some of those funds. And then we also saw a second wave of funding for that. And in fact, there is still more funding available. So they opened up additional monies, and some money came back through people returning it. That, as far as we know, as the last time I looked, there is still some money available through the Paycheck Protection Program, the PPP program. And there's certain criteria, and again, it's a little bit too complicated to go in to this on the show, but it's available to small businesses and self-employed businesses as well. You have to understand the criteria, but it is a loan that the rate is 1%, and you don't have to start paying it back right away. So even if you just get the loan, that could be a huge benefit. But then there is a forgiveness piece of that loan, which I think is what made it so attractive that so many businesses, especially those bigger businesses that had, you know, counsel on staff that advised them to apply for these loans, number one, because of the great interest rate, and number two, because some of it was going to be forgivable. And it was going to be forgivable to the extent you used up to 75% of it toward payroll and 25% to, like, maintain your expenses for, like, rent or mortgages. The payroll included not only your hourly wages, but also some of the benefits that you give your employees. So that was a great incentive. People were going to get this money and have it forgiven. So a huge incentive to apply for this money. But some of the smaller businesses probably couldn't compete with some of the bigger ones. And so some of the, when the money dried up, they probably thought, "Oh, well, I didn't get it. Bummer." Well, with the second round of funding, if you thought you might have applied before but the money ran out, you could get your application in again. Or if you had your application in the first time, you want to make sure that the bank, you know, revisits that or gives you a call, so contact your loan provider for that. What we have seen recently, so as far as an update on that goes, is the House just passed something in the last few days, and it still has to go to the Senate, and there may be some compromises and changes. But what the House is proposing is that with these paycheck protection loans, is that they only require maybe 60% of the loan to be used toward payroll, and then you can have the other 40% for some of these other expenses. I think what no one had anticipated is that while they were encouraging people to hire back people, and that was the purpose of forgiving the loan, to keep people employed, get them off the unemployment, if some people couldn't come back or were afraid to come back, or maybe you couldn't hire them back because you might still be one of those businesses that's not allowed to open. with so much confusion around it, I think that the government is trying to be a little bit more flexible and try to modify some of the provisions that were initially attached to some of these programs. So if they make it a little bit less for payroll, a little bit more for expenses, that could cover maybe where not everyone has come back to work, but you still have maybe some higher cost of operation. So that was going to change. The other thing was you had to use the money within like 8 weeks from the time you received your loan. So they're also trying to update that where they take it from 8 weeks to 24 weeks. So that certainly gives people, from 2 months to 6 months to use it. That is a bigger bridge and probably one that would be needed even more as we've seen the closing, kind of go on a little bit longer than maybe people thought. So from 8 weeks to 24 weeks, from 75% payroll to 60% payroll. And also for the rehiring, I think the rehiring was supposed to be within from June by June 30th, and they're hoping to update that to rehire up through December of 2020. So again, they're trying to kind of give a little bit more flexibility on the Paycheck Protection Program. While at the same time, I think they're coming down harder on who's going to qualify for the forgiveness. So you'll work with the SBA or your local bank to calculate the forgiveness of the loan and how you calculate that. There will be people who will help you figure that all out. As far as the economic income disaster loans, you want to kind of keep checking on that. At first, the money was exhausted, and then I think there was some additional funding provided, and then it was limited. There's two pieces to that program. One is a loan, one is a grant, and I think it was the grant that originally ran out of money, and they were limiting it because the grant could be up to $10,000, and then they kind of scaled that back and were giving some people just $1,000. It all depended on your circumstances and situation, if you were a business or if you were self-employed. And I think most recently they were still making some of the funding available but limited for agricultural purposes. So the EIDLs, very specific, and those loans are also at a much higher rate of interest than the 1% we see through the Pension Protection Program. Let's talk a little bit about some of the other provisions, the tax relief. So as many of you know, we do have some delays. That is relief. It is a relief that we have more time to file our tax returns. The IRS is giving us until July 15th, and they're also giving us some relief in the payment of our taxes and the payment of our estimated taxes. We have until July 15th to file our tax return, and we have until July 15th to make the payments for our 2019 taxes if we owe money on our 2019 taxes, and our estimated quarterly payments for people who make estimated tax payments. They're normally due April 15th and then June 15th, and the IRS has said that we can wait and make those July 15th. But keep in mind, that's going to be a lot to pay all at once if you owe big dollars for your 2019 tax return and your estimated tax payments. So you want to make sure that you revisit that and if you're going to qualify for that. There is some other relief available as well, which I will talk about in just a moment when we get back from our next break. If you have questions, you're welcome to send those through the website at yourfinancialchoices.com. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY Lehigh Valley Public Radio is committed to our listeners' health and safety during the COVID-19 outbreak. Help us stop coronavirus. Lehigh Valley residents can do the five. Wash your hands for 20 seconds. Stay home unless absolutely necessary. Cover your face if you have to go out. Stay 6 feet apart of social distance. Feel sick? Contact medical professionals for next steps. For coronavirus updates and information, go to WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You are listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. This show is pre-recorded. If you have questions, you can send them through the website at yourfinancialchoices.com. We welcome questions, and we also welcome topic ideas. If you would like to hear more information about something relevant to you and others, I would be happy to address those on the show. They are financially related topics, and we'd love to hear from you. Again, that's at yourfinancialchoices.com. We're talking tonight about the CARES Act and some of the provisions of the CARES Act and the timeline. Just to kind of touch base on what we've talked about, the economic income payment or stimulus payment, recall that it comes either direct deposit, check, or the new debit card. Watch out for that. Comes in a plain envelope. There will be a letter for it to tell you how to activate that card, either via phone or computer. It is a Visa card, and it is issued by MetaBank. And so be careful of that, but follow the instructions. Maybe contact a relative who might confirm for you to make sure it's not a scam so that you, you know, aren't being taken in. What I'm getting nervous here about as I'm talking about it is we don't know how fast someone else could respond to a scam and make something look like it's real. So just always be so careful. I'm so glad that I've had clients who are very smart to call and check ahead of time before proceeding. And then we've talked a little bit about the unemployment and how the unemployment benefits have been extended 13 weeks, which I think takes us to 39 weeks, and that the there was a federal program that provides an extra $600 a week. That is to go through July 31st. And if you are applying late for unemployment, the payments will be retroactive, and that there are now benefits available for people who are self-employed who traditionally did not qualify for unemployment. There is a special portal for that. Make sure you're going to the proper portal, and I believe that would probably apply no matter what state of residence you are. In Pennsylvania, there is a separate portal for the PUA, Pandemic Unemployment Assistance. So self-employed people will also be eligible for that extra $600 and the extra 13 weeks of unemployment coverage. So be aware of that. Tax relief, we've talked about the delayed filing dates and the delayed payment dates. So that has all been moved to July 15th. The reason I like to use the term delayed rather than extended is because when we tell people that they have been extended, they think they have to file an extension for their tax return. No, you do not. Delayed for everyone. So 2019 tax returns are due July 15th. The payments, if you owe, are also due July 15th. And if you make estimated tax payments, you can do both your first and second quarter, so your April 15th and June 15th payment, in one for the July 15th due date. That is for federal and for state and for local. They've all, you know, decided to do that together, the same filing date, July 15th. The IRS also extended some other returns that might have a different due date than April 15th. It could be any due date between April 1st and, oh gosh, I think it was between April 1st and July 15th or June 30th. I just lost track. But 706s, 709s, 1120s, a lot of tax returns that would have had a due date during this period have been extended to July 15th. Okay, so that is a help as well. So that was for deadlines. I just looked this up. Actions fell on or after April 1st through July 14th, 2020. The deadline has been extended to July 15th, 2020. So this includes 1040s, 1120s, 1041s, that's a state or trust tax return, 706s, which is a federal estate tax return, a 709-1065 partnership return. So a number of forms. If you're not sure, you can go to the IRS website, irs.gov, and just search in their search box due dates of tax returns and include in your description coronavirus, and up will pop the link to give you more information on that. I had someone ask a question. A client asked a question. They are a resident of Pennsylvania, but they work in New York. Now, if you're a resident of Pennsylvania and you work in New York, then you have New York wages, and you have to pay taxes on those New York wages in New York. But as a Pennsylvania resident, you get a credit for the taxes paid to New York. Their question was, normally, if you're a Pennsylvania resident and you work in New York, but you work days outside of New York, we get to make an adjustment on your state return for that. So if you're a New York employee, you have a New York employer, and you make, let's say, $100,000 a year, but 10% of the time you're traveling around the country for that employer. You're going for meetings other places outside of New York. We can reduce the New York wages for that amount because you're a resident of Pennsylvania and you weren't working in New York, so we can make an adjustment for that. Well, her question was, my husband's working from home every day now. Can we make an adjustment for him not working in New York? Well, I imagine it would follow along the same lines as when someone works from home for their own convenience. So if someone's working in New York and they're a Pennsylvania resident, just because they're working from home for their own convenience, we can't count those as days working outside of New York. They literally have to be working, you know, by a requirement of their employer, you know, at a meeting in Chicago or a meeting in Michigan or a meeting somewhere else. Those are actual work days outside of New York that I can count as not being worked in New York, because that would lower their tax, because we have lower tax in Pennsylvania than we do in New York. So that could be beneficial to my New York workers. But working from home as a convenience would not normally qualify for that. I'm very interested to see if they make any kind of exception for this circumstance. Because what if the New York employer says, you can't come into the office, we need you to work from home? Will that count? Well, right now, my position is, I'm not going to say it counts because your New York employer has a New York office for you, and you're not required necessarily maybe to work from home, but in this circumstance, are they? It'll be very interesting. I'm hoping that there will be more guidance on it as we, you know, move along through this. And I'm sure those questions will come up. That could be very fruitful for PA residents who work in New York, because we have a much lower tax rate in Pennsylvania than New York. So those days worked outside of New York can make quite a difference. But right now, I'm assuming they would not count just because we're having to work from home under these circumstances. I had seen something, too, because I know that this could apply to some people, as far as some employer benefits or help, because when we think about being required to work from home, people who had not ever worked from home before now might find themselves in a situation where they're having to, you know, check their internet or buy a new computer or a new monitor. So I saw in the Philadelphia Inquirer that there was a question, what's a tax-free way to get my employer to reimburse me for disaster costs? So their response was, under a law called the Stafford Act, employers could provide tax-free assistance to employees during a disaster. So a number of clients have been asking about this recently because of the COVID, and because the pandemic is a nationwide emergency, the employers might be able to reimburse some of their employees' expenses. So under Section 139, it allows employers to reimburse employees for additional expenses they incurred because of the emergency. A company could reimburse somebody for the cost of installing high-speed internet in their home or a personal computer, a printer, or office supplies They can be any reasonable and necessary personal, family, living, or funeral expenses incurred as a result of a qualified disaster. So this might be something that, as an employee, you may not have thought about asking your employer. It might be something you want to mention if you feel you were compelled to add equipment, buy equipment, upgrade equipment that you're using to work from home. So a great number of people have been fortunate enough to be able to keep their jobs and work from home, but may not have had the equipment to do so or the resources to do so. So if you are someone who had to put out money to do this and had not thought about asking your employer about reimbursement, this might be something that would apply to you and something you might want to explore. So because we're under basically a national emergency, I guess is what you would call it. So as we come up on these next several weeks and months, we're going to see people heading back into the workforce, going back to work. There may be still a catch-up to do on cash flow. What I have been hearing more from people is that they have been saving money because they have not been spending as much. And this is typically people who were able to continue to work and work, have their jobs, and spending less. So money's coming in, spending less. They have some extra money. You can either shore up your reserves or maybe set aside some of it for retirement plans. But what about those people who weren't working from home, did not have their jobs? Some people were receiving unemployment. I've been told some people were receiving more from unemployment than they were working because of the extra $600 a week that they were getting. That might be something you want to save and set aside for your emergencies, because one thing we've learned through this whole process is you never know what to expect. We don't know how long it's going to last. We don't know how it's going to impact us. We don't know if we might be someone who's affected by the job market or if our jobs are going to be eliminated or furloughed or if we're going to be able to come back. So make sure, folks, during this period, if you were able to benefit from either keeping your job with lower expenses or benefiting from the higher unemployment, what are you doing with that extra money? Save it, set it for reserves, or put more in your retirement, but be smart about it. So I hope this little update helped. As I have mentioned in prior shows, it just seems like there's updated information kind of regularly, and what we think we knew, 6 weeks ago has changed. So we kind of want to always revisit it and kind of come back to things. I thought next week what I would do would be talk about the labor market and the jobs. And I want to go back to something I had talked about probably in the last few years, which is the difference in unemployment based on education levels and how the more education, the more likely you were to keep your job. I think that's very relevant today, and I think it's something that we should talk about and make sure we understand the impact of that, and then how the labor market looks and anything else related to labor. So I'll do that next week. I want to thank you for joining us and appreciate your attention and time. And coming up next, we have folk music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.